Well, a week of great soccer ahead of us. It'll be Europe versus South America, pretty much. Who's going to make it through to the final? We don't know, but one man who's got a good idea is Eamon Dunphy. If you want to talk to Eamon, 51551 or email mooney@rte.ie.
The burden of proof is on you.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
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 No,
yes,
it's not.
Yes,
it's
it
not,
is.
It's not. It's not.
Yes,
it's
it
not,
is.
Not,
now, look, Kenny, let's do this in baby steps. Number one, Bill asks a question. Number two, I answer it. Number three, you agree. And number four, you shut up. Your time will come, baby. It's my time.
And sometimes it's really hard to tell the difference between the real Eamon Dunphy and the brilliant Apres Match parody by Gary Cook. And it's not just the sound of the voice, it's actually what they say as well. In case you didn't know, that was the Apres Match version of the legendary man himself, Eamon Dunphy. And right now we're asking, would the real Eamon Dunphy please stand up? And is Yvonne Q, he is here. Eamon, you're very welcome to the throne. Thank you.
It's
you were
pleasure,
on with us years ago, but you weren't in studio, so it's the first time we've had you in.
Yeah,
so
no,
we're all kind
great.
Of thrilled.
Yeah, I'm
and
delighted
excited
to be here. Thank
and
you.
Nervous. So we have a pause button on standby.
Okay.
All right. First things first, how is Ray Houghton? Because I heard he was after
well,
coming home.
Apparently suffering from hypertension and high blood pressure. They have had to do an inordinate amount of travelling in Brazil. Him and George, Peter Collins is out there as well. So it's been very tough, I imagine. And Ray, obviously, you know, has fallen ill. I don't think it's anything serious, but he's coming home, which means George is on his own.
Right, and none of you guys have been sent out
no,
as super subs.
No, I think somebody else may be sent out. If they're looking for volunteers, I won't be volunteering.
Would you not like to be out there, no?
I'd rather be in the studio with the lads working. I think the travel... And the other thing you see more in the match, Con Hoolan very famously said that he missed the 1990 World Cup because he was in Italy. If you're at home, you see all the games.
You see all the games.
Whereas if you're on the road as a journalist, you're travelling between places, you're writing your copy, and it's not so much fun.
Yeah, it's bloody hard work in a different type of way, isn't it?
Very, very much so. Yeah. I covered the 1994 World Cup in the United States, and it was very, very hard work.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for the freedom of live television, in fact, because you don't have to sit down. You react immediately to what you've seen. Yeah. You might be watching the game, and you might make a note or two in your head mentally or on a piece of paper, but you don't have to write a column and put that into words, and everybody can follow what you're saying.
Exactly.
You can just come out and say it, which you do, in fairness.
Well, we do. We give forthright opinions, I guess. We sometimes disagree with each other. But we try to do it as if there was no camera and no sound and you were just in a bar with your friends and you love football and this is the thing you do and that you try to keep it as real as possible.
Yeah.
Instead of what a lot of punditry involves is waiting until the light goes out and you're off air to give your real opinion.
And do you think that's what they do on ITV and BBC? I mean, they've got these fantastic backdrops. I often, when I look at you guys, I think the only thing we're lacking here is the backdrop. And I mean, from the point of view is the Copacabana beach isn't stretched out behind you, behind a glass wall. You guys are in the studio, you're confined, but yet you bring it to life.
Well, I think so, because I don't think they really express rigorous opinion. And I mean, I think that's what, if football is a form of popular culture, and why shouldn't it be subjected to intelligent and rigorous and sometimes contrarian opinion? Because that's the way people feel at home. They want to engage with real opinions. They don't want to be fooled or bluffed, particularly in Ireland. It's very hard to bluff the Irish people.
Yeah.
So I think what makes it work for RT, and it isn't just soccer, the rugby coverage and panel also.
And the Gaelic
Games. The Gaelic Games,
across
Joe Rowley, you know, and people like that. Pat Spillane. They have run into trouble with the authorities, with players, but RTE has always had a refreshing and liberating drive to encourage people to speak their mind and to confront the real issues, because that's the way people are consuming the games and enjoying them at home. But the last thing they want is three dummies in the studio pretending everything is wonderful.
Yeah, you don't want to be patronised when you're watching it too as well.
You don't want to be patronising your audience, because they're the people who, you know, pay our money, pay our salaries. And there's nothing condescending or patronising about RT's coverage of sport. It's brilliant. And it's also very challenging. But I think that's the way I like to view sport, as when I'm sitting at home on my couch. I like to listen to real opinion and to the real sort of emotions people feel when they're watching games.
And you don't mind the sketches?
No, I love Apres Match. I think they're brilliant. I really do.
Do the entire team love Apres Match?
Except for John. John isn't really mad about it. He thinks that we shouldn't be making fun of ourselves. But, you know, I think that they're brilliant.
And what does he do? Does he object to it? Does he say, stop playing?
No, he doesn't really. I mean, he puts up with it. But whereas Liam and I and Bill might wait to watch a sketch, or Dara Maloney the other day, particularly close to the bone sketch about Dara, which they did, he watched it and laughed, you know. Whereas John will tend to go to makeup and put his makeup on and go out. Sorry, take his makeup off.
Anyway, we're watching it. I asked you before we come on air to pronounce the name for me. Tostão?
Yeah, Tostão was a great Brazilian player. He played in the great 1970 World Cup winning team with Pelé. And he was renowned as a footballer. And his great, which is great for me because I was a smoker, he smoked 40 cigarettes a day. Yeah. And all the guys around our schoolboy scene and around football was saying, if you play football, you can't smoke. Here's this guy picking up his World Cup winners medal. So it kept me going for another 10 years.
And he's a medical doctor too, to boot. I mean, but anyway, I was reading that he said some time ago that Brazil had two strategies for this World Cup. And the first strategy was, give it to Neymar. And the second strategy was, give it to Neymar. Yeah. And then somebody else has given it to Neymar. He's gone.
He's gone,
so
yeah.
So where does that leave Brazil?
It leaves them in an even bigger hole than the one they were in before, because even with Neymar, they weren't playing very well. But he was kind of the inspiration for the team, the person expected to, you know, become, in World Cup victory, the great modern Brazilian player. And now he's out of the tournament, and the nation there is very passionately involved in it. So it's a big blow to them.
It is.
And they're playing Germany tomorrow, of course, who would have been favoured, I think, to beat them regardless. But their captain, Thiago Silva, is out. Neymar is out. Now, this is the moment of truth for the whole tournament, in a way, and certainly for the host nation, Brazil.
I was going to say, for the country, really, because when we think of all the protests leading up to the games, and now they've petered out a little bit. You know, they're still going on, as I understand. There are still protests, but not on the same scale they were before the games, because the people have now been, as we were, you know, when you go back to Italian 19, all of that, we were caught up with the mood, so you get behind it totally. And there is much more resonance, and now they're passionate about it. And now the man who was doing the business for them, was it four goals he scored?
He scored four goals and crucial goals.
Crucial goal. And everything was laid on his shoulders, and now he's out with a fractured vertebrae. Yeah. Because that attack, I looked at it on YouTube today.
Yeah.
That was pretty nasty attack.
Yeah, it was.
It didn't look like an accident or an incident to me.
No. He barged into him it was rough. It was quite robust. It didn't, to be honest, Derek, look like it was a tackle that would cause a serious injury.
No,
it was. He barged
just
into him.
Just goes to show.
Yeah. I didn't think he was badly injured. I thought he just had the stuffing knocked out of him. But the vertebrae cracked. That's very, very... But the match, it was out of hand at that stage. It was about, you know, 75 minutes into the match, the referee had let anarchy break out from the first whistle. And it was the Brazilians who started it. Mm. Really, the Colombians got sucked into it. Colombia's best player, James Rodriguez, was hammered repeatedly by Brazilians, and the referee took no action.
Yeah, they singled him out, didn't they?
They did, because he is an outstanding player, and he posed a big threat. And Scolari, the Brazilian coach, decided to take him out, really. And it then became just like a back alley fight, and Neymar is a casualty of that.
So he's gone. So, I mean, what would you think the chances are of Brazil qualifying now for the semi-final? What we have is Europe.
They're in the semi-final.
The semi-finals we have, really, for both semi-finals, it's Europe against South America. So it could be either Europe, or South America.
Yeah, or...
Europe, South America.
Yeah,
course,
the dream final for people who don't know much about football, and I suppose for South Americans, is Argentina-Brazil. And that's what people were predicting, because they were scheduled in their draw not to meet each other until the final, if all went according to plan. That would be an amazing game of football, because of the passions involved and the hatreds really involved. I think I would doubt if Brazil could seriously threaten Germany tomorrow. Germany would be favourites, should be favourites, and I think in most people's minds are favourites now.
And they're over the flu, are they?
They're over the flu.
Seven of them had the flu before the quarterfinal game.
They have great doctors. They were good enough to beat France in what was a very big match for both countries. So Germany will be favourites. And then we'll see what happens to the tournament when Brazil are out of it. And those protests you referred to, there's a lot of corruption involved around this tournament. 12 stadiums were built. Lots of... I think it's $11 billion were spent on stadiums that will never be used again, some of them. And the contracts were, are believed to have been given out corruptly to friends of the government. And, of course, it's very poor.
Allegedly, we're supposed
allegedly,
to have to say,
yeah,
yes.
But that's what people are protesting on the streets about, in the favelas and on the streets. Mm. There is a protest movement, and they have been, as it were, drowned out by the joy the nation's experiencing. But when you look closely at the crowds in the stadiums, they're all beautiful girls with perfect teeth and handsome men. I don't think they are representative. I think it's Roy Keane once described the corporate sector of Old Trafford as where the prawn cocktail brigade sit. Prawn cocktail sandwich brigade sit. Now, I think there's a touch of that about
so you think it's the
Brazilian
middle class
games.
Brazilians do.
I do.
But remember, cosmetic surgery is big in Brazil at every level of the socioeconomic ladder, I can assure you. I know quite a few Brazilians, and
really?
It's across the board, and it's as cheap as chips. I mean, you can go in there and have your teeth done and your nose done for...
Of course, and the directors can pan into that. But sometimes when Brazil score a goal, they cut to an image of people celebrating in the favelas, watching in shacks, sitting on beer crates and drinking beer. And it looks like there are two Brazils, clearly, the rich and the poor. The gap is huge. And this corruption, is offensive to many Brazilians.
Yeah,
and it's turned them off the tournament.
The president has labelled Neymar the hero, our hero. Hopefully we'll get better sooner. She said something like that because she's up for election again. I mean, they're riding the wave here now if Brazil do well. Of course, if Brazil... don't do well, and you don't think they'll do. You think Germany's going to go through?
Yeah.
What about the other game? Do you think Argentina will get it? It would be good to have a Europe versus South America, wouldn't it?
It would very much so.
Sure, FIFA would probably prefer that. Actually,
yeah, I think it's too tight to call the Holland Argentina game. Messi is the great player of the modern game. Him and Ronaldo, who's gone home with Portugal, but Messi, the feeling that Messi could take Brazil all the way. Is certainly, it's very seductive, shall we say, and it would be wonderful to see this great player take his nation to the final and then the trophy, ideally against Brazil, but I think it's going to be Germany. And slight favourites, maybe, Argentina because of Messi, but Holland have Van Persie, they have Robin, and they have Wesley Sneijder, and probably a very inspired coach who made an amazing decision the other night to take his goalkeeper off for the penalty shootout and put the bigger guy on with the longer arms.
Made all the difference.
It sure did,
Yeah, and I was against my team, Costa Rica. I had them, I told you, 2001, 7 or 8 weeks ago, which was fantastic. And what I've noticed, what I've really enjoyed about this particular World Cup is that the teams that weren't expected to do so well, the underdogs played with real passion and real skill. And I read a very interesting article in the Telegraph, and he was talking about the management skills of the World Cup. Not just the players, but the management skills, saying that how there's a new breed of manager now, and it's the... He said he's not being sexist, ageist rather, excuse me, that he's not talking about the old managers, he's talking about guys who come in and just have a different approach and different attitude to the game.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think he mentioned the English coach, Hodgson.
Hodgson, yeah, and he mentioned Capello before
and
that.
Capello,
as well.
Yeah.
Very, and their attitude, yeah.
Very conservative figures, chosen by a very conservative football association, and their teams reflecting that conservatism, whereas a lot of what we've seen has been brave, offensive. Mexico, Chile, who almost beat Brazil, very offensive team. Costa Rica, not afraid at all, and they beat Italy, they beat Uruguay.
Fantastic.
They played a weakened team and drew with England.
I mean, remember, England were expecting Italy to beat them.
Yes, they were.
To qualify,
yep.
And it didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen. So a lot of the lesser-known nations in international football have emerged through this World Cup, and they have played with more passion, more belief, and astonishing confidence. Mm. I mean, the idea that Costa Rica could threaten to knock the Netherlands out, take them to penalty shootout, and almost win it is extraordinary in the history of football.
And Algeria were fantastic.
Algeria were amazing. Should have beaten Germany. Could have beaten them. Should have beaten them, arguably. And they had had a bad time before the World Cup. They were, were poor in the African Cup of Nations, but they rose to this occasion, and that's what's been wonderful about it. Unexpected stars emerging, like Rodriguez of Colombia, and you know, small nations like Algeria, or at least small nations in footballing terms like Algeria, doing amazingly well.
Yeah, their goalkeeper is brilliant.
Yeah,
he's going to be a big star now, I'd say.
Yeah, the Costa Rica goalkeeper is amazing. Mm. His name is Navas, and he's amazing. He plays for a small club called Levante in the Spanish League, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see him moving to the Premier League and earning big bucks there.
And what about USA? We were all USA last week.
Team USA.
Team USA.
Yeah,
did you have any money on them? Did you put a few quid down? Did you win any money? Did you lose any money?
I'd say I'm slightly ahead because I'm betting match by match, and my money is on Holland. At the moment, I can change it. I'm on the internet betting and Holland at the moment. But to be honest, I talked to John, talked to Liam, talked to lots of people who've been on the panel with us, Brad Friedel. We've had some, you know, RT have got an array of stars, Neil Lennon, the Celtic, former Celtic manager. So talk to everybody, and the consensus is we don't know who's going to win, which is the charm of it, really.
My team were Colombia. And I was very disappointed they went out.
They had a great welcome home, though, didn't they?
They did, and they were, you know, kind of robbed, you know. They were kicked to death.
I think so. But I kind of said to you earlier on that I just, in the absence of Ireland, when it's difficult to know who to support, I'll support the team with the fewest lying, cheating, diving, vicious, fouling, whinging moaners. And it's difficult to know who that team is, but I suspect probably Germany or Argentina, certainly not Brazil or Netherlands. I don't like Robin, dives all over the place. He has a left foot.
I think he's been one of the best players in the tournament.
He has,
In terms of goals scored and performances delivered. But he did admit to diving, which is cheating. Mm. But that's endemic in football now everywhere. And that's just a very bad example of it. We hope that the World Cup won't be won by a penalty, which isn't really a penalty. Not entirely inconceivable.
It's very annoying. It's very annoying, It's not fair.
No, it's not.
But isn't that the great thing about Messi? And it's why I would always put him a header on Ronaldo. He just doesn't do that. So he plays the game with a smile on his face. He's very positive. And I actually think it rubs off on the Argentinian team because you don't see the rest of them doing it. So to me, though, the teams I'd like to see in the final are Argentina and Germany. But I think if Argentina meet Brazil, it'll be a foul affair.
I think it will be. It will be. There'll be an awful lot of bad blood. There is anyway. I've actually seen a game between Brazil and Argentina in Brazil, in Recife, several years ago. And it was just bad blood and wild passion. And they'd be kicking lumps out of each other. But Messi, as you say, rightly, is such a great player because he doesn't indulge in any of that stuff.
Eamon, do you know what I love about the panel? There are so many things I love about the panel. I love it more than the game itself. But when you get one of these guest panellists over, like, as you said, Neil Lennon or somebody like that, the next manager or whatever, and they're just kind of dropped into you and you can see their reaction as to how honest you are and how opinionated you are, and they're kind of in shock. And I love watching them react to you and saying, oh my God, I have to up my game here if I have to survive on this panel. And I think we've seen it, I think with Graham Souness particularly. Well, I remember Graham, him coming over.
Graham worked with us on World Cup and Champions League and European Champions. He was actually, and Didi Hamam, Didi laughs sometimes when I say something particularly blunt. He's very, very knowledgeable and very, very good. But they're used to the kind of, what should I say, the bland approach of the British analysts who don't want to offend anybody, particularly guys, players they might meet in a nightclub or a bar. So they tend to be anodyne, I'd say is the word.
I heard Souness was in shock when he first came over and met you guys. He was a tough man on the field. To put him into shock, but you could see it on his face.
He went back to work for Sky, and he's a much, much better pundit now.
Having you,
honestly.
But he had good training.
He's rigorous. Now,
he probably stands out.
Well, it's the way to do the job properly, and it's the way RTE have cultivated it to be done. And as I say, once again, it isn't just the soccer panel. The rugby panel is rigorous as well. Mm. And RTE have always taken sport seriously, and not it doesn't believe its audience is consists of couch potatoes with a tin of beer in their hand and not thinking. We actually do believe that the audience is engaging, is intelligent, knows its sport, and doesn't want...
Yeah, but even if you don't know it, when you sit watching a game and you see something that's blatantly wrong, you want somebody to say that's...
Yeah, you do.
You know what.
But that
you know,
comes from the top. I mean, we had the late Tim O'Connor was the head of sport. The present managing director of television, Glenn Killan, was the head of sport. The interim managing director of television is Ryan Nugent, who's a rugby commentator and the head of sport. So sport hasn't been, as it is in England, the toy shop or the ghetto where you put all the dum-dums. It's actually, as particularly soccer.
Well, it gets the biggest audiences, except for the Eurovision Parliament.
Well, yeah.
President, Derek. Of course. But think of the audiences
in next
gets.
Year. Yeah. The Eurovision.
Yeah, why not?
No, but I think we believe...
Look, it delivers.
We believe there's an intelligent audience out there. They want to engage. And if you don't have to be right about everything. And you don't have to be nice to everybody.
No, I like the way they have it. There's always been this Eamon versus Liam kind of thing, you know.
Oh,
and
I
now they have Richard and Kenny going at each other. And I like that.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, I'd be backing Richie on that one.
he is Mr. Cool, though, isn't he?
Richie's Mr. Cool.
Richie's
sadly.
And Kenny's
Mr. Hot. He's easy on the eye as well, isn't he?
Just a few emails for you. Right. Hi, Derek. Can you ask Eamon if he thinks Liverpool will do any better without Suarez next season? Also, what does he think Brendan Rodgers should try? Who does he think Brendan Rodgers should try to replace him with, Tom and Waterford?
Well, I don't think they'll do better without him because he's such a great player. I think there is a player playing, a Belgian. His name is Origi. He's a young guy that Liverpool are interested in. He played a couple of matches. He scored a goal in the finals here. He's very promising. He's very young. I think that's a player they may replace him with. But he is irreplaceable. He was great for Liverpool last year.
Do you think one player makes a team?
One player can make a team. Messi, Argentina would be a good example, wouldn't it?
But what about James Rodriguez? Would Liverpool not go after him?
I think he's out of their price range. He went to
million?
Monaco for 37 million. Now they reckon he'll go for double that to Real Madrid. But and he wants to go to Madrid. You see, these guys aren't Premiership. Being in South American, Spanish league, for Suarez, even he wants to go to Barcelona because Spain is the mecca.
It's outrageous money, isn't it? It's just.
It is. It is outrageous money. But television money's huge.
That's what's fueling it. Yeah,
the Premiership contract for television next year is going up to 5 billion.
Billion.
Billion. Billion. And it's over 200 countries watch it live. About 225 watch Premiership match, every Premiership match live. And in Spain, it's different. And that's why a lot of clubs in Spain are bankrupt. Madrid keep their own television money and Barcelona keep theirs.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still very wealthy clubs.
So 80 million is what Suarez is going for. So.
Well, Suarez is going for 80 million. If he bites someone again, they'll have done their dough.
Well, absolutely. Well, some guy has won, 630 euro, some Swedish guy, betting before the World Cup that Suarez would actually bite somebody. And he won 630 quid because he did bite somebody. He bit somebody, went off. Yeah. Eamon Duffy for next Ireland manager.
I'd love that.
So, would you like it? Yeah. This is from Brian and Rathkeel.
I think we'd have a lot of fun, we'd bring back Andy Reid, we'd have sing-songs.
Oh, well, I'd be up for that,
Do you mind if I ask Eamon a question?
Well, I can't stop you.
About England.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was having this conversation
with
somebody.
A lot of English listeners. I don't want you upsetting.
Oh, I'm not going to upset anybody. Okay. I was having this conversation with somebody around the final England game. And we were making the point, I was making the point that if you look at the Premiership, you have players there from all over the world. There probably isn't a country, a developed soccer country anyway, not represented in the Premiership. If you take the top 5 or 10 clubs worldwide, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Dortmund, Porto, Milan, Juventus, the top 10, even the South American clubs. I don't think one Englishman plays for any of those top 10 clubs. Not one. Gareth Bale plays for Real Madrid, but he's Welsh.
Yes.
And I don't think, until top clubs around the world creates a demand for English players, or until English players are good enough to be in demand from top clubs around the world, I don't think they can possibly perform at World Cup.
Well, it's funny because I think, isn't it, Germany and the, Brazil tomorrow, a lot of the players, they're all based in Europe and playing in Europe.
Yeah, they are.
Pretty much all of them.
I think England, we're not breeding young footballers in these islands because it's a street game, essentially, for poor people. Because there are so many alternatives for young lads now, and they can go and play with their computers or do things.
They've got all the soccer academies in the UK.
But what they're doing is it's kind of institutionalising it, making kids listen to coaches. It's football's a game you need to learn yourself. It's called a beautiful game because it's a game of improvisation. So if you stop people improvising, like Messi improvises or Neymar, then which is what coaches tend to do, because they want people to do they want predictability, they want you to repeat what you've done before, and it kills the individuality, the originality that's essential to being a great player. As to your point about English players, I don't think that has ever been in the English character, frankly. I think it's a long, long time now since England produced a great player. Wayne Rooney is probably the closest one to it, and he didn't get there.
Liam Brady used to make the point that when he was... is he still youth coach?
He's given up his job as director of youth development.
But he was kind of saying that he used to watch a lot of underage game. We're talking under 8, under 10, under 12. Mm. And there was this thing about don't lose. And if you get the ball as a defender, get rid of it, kick it out there. It was more of a priority not to lose than to actually express yourself, be creative, and play the right pass, even if it doesn't go quite right.
Yeah.
Is that still...
Yeah, because you have teams competing now at under 8, under 9, and they have coaches, and the coaches' prestige and esteem, self-esteem, is on the line. They want to win the league. So if there's a little guy who's very tricky and does amazing things but gets bundled over, you drop him and you get a big guy in and who can muscle his way to success. And that's killing football at grassroots level.
It's funny how you mentioned about... training kind of and not allowing people to express themselves like a street game, because we used to say that in music, like when I worked in music, that if you look at all the great, great, great pop artists across the ages, whether it's the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, U2, Led Zeppelin, and all these people who wrote all these great songs, none of them had any classical training. They just all took up guitars at 14, 50. It was a passion.
I think that's the key, and I think very it's very few, analogous to
ABBA being an exception. There's very few great songwriters, sorry, wish Paul G was here, who have had any training as such. Most of them just pick up a guitar and piano and whatever.
Hi, Eamon, I think you're very good on TV, and I always try to listen to you. How do you stick your man Cunningham on the panel? He snarls every time you make a point. I don't know how you keep your cool. Nicky the Eggman in Tipperary. If you're ever in Tip, Eamon, try my eggs.
Okay, Nicky.
Unfertilized.
If you send me a dozen, I'll stick them on Kenny's head next time.
Is that Nicky female or Nicky male?
It just says Nicky the Eggman in Tipperary.
Oh, the Eggman, sorry.
I think it was an insult to the goalkeeper being replaced for the penalty shootout. He was good enough for all the other matches. The manager's head is as big as his ego, says Joe in Dublin. But the manager made the right decision.
He made the right call, as things turned out. It was a brave call to make. Van Gaal isn't renowned for his modesty.
No, not at all. No.
And he's going to manage Manchester United, where they're not renowned for their modesty either. So let's see what happens.
Can you ask Eamon Dunphy, will he be doing his weekly soccer travel in English football on his website for 2014-2015 season?
Yes, I haven't got my website up yet, but I'm having it designed, and there will be a get-rich-quick scheme involving my football tips.
Derek Eamon said Messi to take Brazil all the way.
No.
Did you? You may apologise again.
I'm sorry about that. I think you'll take Argentina all the way.
It'll never happen again.
Never happen again.
How did you feel that night? Were you embarrassed? Or were you
mortified? I was embarrassed. I was, of course, because at that time of night, it was an afternoon, 5 o'clock kickoff, and lots of kids watching, and I was very embarrassed indeed, and very remorseful, because it's not nice to hear what was in fact a seven-letter word when you got kids in the house. It's not nice, and it's coarse, and it's. I don't believe in normalising swearing.
Oh, well, so
I'm quite against it, actually.
Tell me, did somebody come down and tell you, listen, you better apologise, or did you...
No, I said immediately that I would apologise. And nobody upstairs said, don't apologise. So it was just a question of doing it to camera as soon as we came back from the following ad break, the one that
Were there any complaints?
There were eight.
Not very many, really.
No, I was when I criticised Jack Charlton in 1990, there were 2,000 in 10 minutes. So on the scale of 1 to 10, I think it was only a 2.
It's funny because...
Should have criticised him with a swear word. Then he would have been
Bill, the way he said over to you now, Eamon, you have something you want to say. It just showed the lovely ease with which you all get on in the panel and his lovely way of, I suppose, of dealing you, pulling you out of yourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. No, Bill is, you know, his... We've been doing it together, me and him, for 35 years and 36 actually, and he's a terrific broadcaster, one of the best sports anchors there's ever been. And he was, of course, outstanding in current affairs before that.
Absolutely. And a nice guy too, very pleasant. Noel from Kerry's been on to say, tell Eamon he's right. He only used a four-letter word. It would be worse if he took a bite out of a fellow panellist.
It'd probably be more fun, though, if I took a bite out of a fellow panellist.
Eamon, I miss you on the radio. You should have your own show, says Greta.
Well, thank you very much, Greta, but I've offended too many people in my
Why did you get up? I actually remember when you were on Today FM. I'd be often in the car at that
the
stage.
Last word.
Yeah. Fantastic radio program.
I loved it.
A start, including Stuart.
Stuart Carney,
who's the writer and creator of Love Hate, for the benefit of people outside. But the terrific show. Do you not like doing it? Did you get fed up doing it, or what was the problem?
No, I loved it. I just, there was a small team of us, and Stuart was such a gifted person. He was doing the comedy on the show, and he was the producer. I just felt that there was no career path for him, or... Another colleague, Emma Bradley, who is a very, very an outstanding young producer. She's actually producing Pat Kenny's program now on
News Talk.
I didn't see a career path for them, and I didn't want to do it without them, and I didn't want them staying there. And I said to Stuart one day, look, Sue, do you want to be a radio producer for me in 5 years' time? And he looked at me. He said, no. I said, well,
No, baby.
So I said, we got to get out of here. And I left. I think you should do something for as long as you're...
Feeling passionate. It, sort of
thing. Yeah, you're feeling it. And I love radio as a medium. And I love that show because it was a breakthrough show for the commercial sector here. And that's why I'm so... grateful for the compliment there that lady just paid.
No, but you have people say about lots of broadcasters, you have a fantastic voice for radio, and I mean that in the true sense. You have a terrific voice for radio. It cuts through. I mean, you could not be mistaken for anybody else.
I used to do a program here called Conversations with which a certain lady outside might know about. And it's still number 13 in the podcast, and we haven't done it for 4 years.
And did you get fed up doing that as well?
No, I did. I wanted to write a book. So I stopped it.
Right.
And I love radio. If someone offered me a radio show, I wouldn't turn it down.
It has to be the right one.
Well, yeah, but I just... if you want to do something, I want to write a book, so... Sometimes you're doing the television, doing the football and that, and you can spread yourself too thin.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think it's good to give up when you're going well, stop... Do your thing and see what life throws at you next.
Come back.
You can always come back.
What about Roy Keane? Double jobbing.
Roy Keane, double jobbing. I don't think it's right, Derek, to be honest. I think he got a big break from Martin O'Neill to be assistant manager for Ireland. He'd been out of work for over 2 years. He's entitled to do what he wants, but I think if you want to be assistant manager to Aston Villa, go and do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to do that and the Irish job because every Saturday the Irish management team should be looking at Irish players in England right through the leagues, Premier League, any other league. I kind of slightly feel that he has been unfair to the FAI and a little bit unfair to Martin.
And the eye is off the ball, quite literally. Yeah, it can't bounce two balls at the same time.
I don't think so. I don't think it's a big, great big issue because Martin O'Neill is the person who really matters. But he's one man down for the scouting side of the job and the monitoring of players, how they're doing, and that. And I don't think that's good enough.
Mm. Please ask Eamon if FIFA should compel Suarez to wear a gum shield. No, say. Anyway, Derek, I agree with Eamon. All the beautiful people were on camera are a reminder of Dublin when the tall ships came in. All the homeless people were moved to Dalier Street out of view, says Mary from Lucan. That's referring to the point you made earlier.
Yes, it is. And I think it's
about... Maybe you have a point. Maybe that's what they
I know it is happening, Derek. I mean, they also swept through the favelas and made people homeless to build infrastructure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But they did the same in South Africa, though. Remember, they knocked down some of the townships.
No, and I think we shouldn't forget that and think that soccer is more important than moving people out of their homes and clearing people they don't want off the streets. You know, we can't let a World Cup or our love of soccer or passion for soccer divert us from that single
fact. But
then
how do you object to that? Do you say, okay, well then, do you know what? We're not going to cover this.
Well, no,
because
I don't think
this is what you have done to people.
Yeah.
You've destroyed their homes. And in Azerbaijan, mentioned the Eurovision again, that's what they did in Baku.
Yeah.
They moved people out to build this new stadium. It happens all over the world when there's something happening. The poor people suffer.
No, and I think in the case of the World Cup and the Olympics, they should be held in the same place all the time. They should have one site, and it also would also stop the corruption that's involved in the bidding for these Olympic and World Cups, because part of the deal now is usually sanitising regimes like the Russian regime, who are oppressive of gay people, they're oppressive, they're anti-Semitic, they're anti-democratic, and there's many things.
Well, if they were here to defend themselves, they say, no, we're not.
No,
but the image that people may perceive is that that's the way it is.
Yeah, see, that's how sport is used now. If the Olympics goes there, you're almost putting the stamp of the world and saying we're giving
seal
you our imprimatur.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it for a place like Qatar, where people are dying in the construction of stadiums,
over 2,000 people so far. It's bizarre, a number of people.
And
actually,
it's not suitable to play football in 50 degrees of heat in the middle of the summer.
Air-conditioned stadia.
I think,
no, I'm only throwing it back at you. This is what they're saying they're going to do.
But I think nearly everybody who's looked at that situation questions it. But very eminent people in football, like Michel Platini, Franz Beckenbauer, supported that bid. But the Sunday Times have done an expose of how the World Cup went to Qatar, and the alleged facts revealed in that are
money
very,
changing
very,
hands or something
yeah,
like that.
Loads of money.
But it's going anyway, unless they have the vote again. Let me see, Derek, can you please absolutely agree with the soccer that Ireland is right? Hi, Derek, can you please ask Eamon if he agrees with me, not me, this person here, that soccer in Ireland is in rag order now, and we have no proper structures in place to coach schoolboys technically, and the Irish senior team will struggle to get back to a World Cup in the future, with the Premiership further damaging our chances?
Well, I understand.
John Delaney. No, that's a joke. John, I'm joking. It's not from John.
I understand where John's coming from.
No, it's not. It's
sorry. Well, whoever sent that text in, I understand where they're coming from. I think Martin O'Neill will do a good job and rehabilitate the senior national team. And I'd say we have a very good chance of qualifying for the European Championships, which will be held in France in 2 years' time. The structural problems, I think the FAI have done a lot.
They've done a huge amount at schoolboy level.
They have, and the schoolboy Dublin District Schoolboy League is a law unto itself. I owe it, and all of us owe the DDSL a lot. But it is run by a group of people.
No, where's my pause button in case you say you're wrong?
They're great friends of mine.
Ding, ding.
But they're not going to let any FAI push them around, and they're not going to listen to the likes of me pontificating. They're the grassroots of soccer. They're fantastic people, and they do amazing work, voluntary work, for young people, young boys and young girls, because girls are playing soccer now. We have a really outstanding international soccer team. Our ladies soccer teams are doing really well, so I think we have hope. But you know, modernity is killing soccer. Not the FAI.
Right. Well, listen, thank you very much for coming in. We've kept you 15 minutes beyond what we should have done.
No problem.
But we really do appreciate it. Why do you get all your predictions wrong, finally, Eamon, says Tom.
I'm not too bad. I mean, if you're predicting, like, I think there's been 64 matches in this World Cup, and
something
you've covered them all. And I've done about 16, I think, or something. If you give a straight answer to that question, who's going to win, if you have to get it right more often than you get it wrong, but you can't be right all the time. And I tend to be spectacularly, when I'm wrong, I say it so with so much, give my forecast with so much conviction that it rather shocks people.
You
I predicted Chile would beat Brazil. And that was an audacious call. They hit the crossbar in the very last minute of the match and lost the penalty shootout. So it wasn't a bad prediction, although technically it was wrong.
OK, well, listen, whatever about all that kind of stuff, who is going to win the World Cup? That's all anybody wants to know. Who?
OK, I said I'd wear a dress if Brazil...
That's right.
Win the World Cup.
Great, fantastic.
He did, yeah.
Below kind of dress.
Derek will lend you one of his.
Can we choose the dress?
You can. And I'll come back and do the show next week in a dress.
In a good night.
Yeah. I think Holland are going to win.
Yay.
Holland or Argentina. I think Germany will beat Brazil. That's a prediction I'm certain I won't get right. Have the money on. You can get nearly 2-1 Germany to win, Derek. So... get it on.
Not good.
You'll get your Costa Rica money back.
Just about. I'll get me Costa Rica. But you, no, give me one country. Tell me who. Don't say one or the other. Who?
Netherlands.
Netherlands. All right. Eamon Dunphy predicts the Netherlands will win the 2014 World Cup. Eamon Dunphy, thank you very much.